Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Deborah Martinez. New Mexico has a shortage of dentists, and it's been like that for a long time, due in part to the rural nature of our state and to a lack of dental insurance and providers who accept Medicaid for care of low-income kids. There are around 1,100 practicing today in New Mexico by a couple of estimates. We're going to look at the state of dentistry in New Mexico today, what's being done to recruit more professionals, and why are so few New Mexicans getting the care they need. Joining me in the studio are Dr. Peter Jensen, Dental Residency Director at the University of New Mexico, and on the phone are Mary Altenberg, Executive Director of the Nonprofit Community Dental Services, and Jerry Harrison of New Mexico Health Resources. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dental shortages are not a new phenomenon in New Mexico. A Pew study recently found that our state was the fourth worst when it comes to availability of dental care. That's behind Mississippi, Louisiana, and Alabama. Dr. Jensen, you oversee training at UNM. Now, we don't have a school of dentistry in the state, so what are students learning under your tutelage?
Let me just back up and explain, Deborah, to the your audience. Medical graduates from medical school are required to do additional training after medical school, which we call a residency training. Dentists are not required to do that. It's optional. A dentist has to take advanced training if he or she selects to become a specialist, like oral surgery, pediatric dentistry. They can also elect to do a general dental residency, and that's what we have here at the University of New Mexico. And it's a one-year program where we take graduates of dental school, and we're training them to treat medically complex patients, to treat more pediatric patients. They learn sedation dentistry. We have a wonderful ambulatory surgery center where we can give tertiary care for children who need full mouth rehabilitations. We can put them to sleep. My residents work in the emergency room, so they learn to treat infection and trauma, and also do consultations at University Hospital for inpatients.
That's a lot of work there. Mary, we have you on the phone still, and I hope we don't lose you because you are on the road. But tell me, if you will, your nonprofit operates clinics in needy areas of Albuquerque here, and you serve more than 11,000 individuals. Tell us about some of the clients your clinicians see. Who are these folks, and what kinds of dental issues are they experiencing?
Well, quite often we serve a lot of the same sorts of folks that the UNM Dental Clinic sees. These are primarily people in the three neediest areas of Albuquerque, and we have over 100 emergency patients every week. We are seeing people with developmental disabilities. We see veterans now. We see low-income, no-income individuals, elders, people who really have no other place to go, Medicaid. It's a safety net dental clinic, and it's for those people who have no other resource for obtaining dental care.
Mm-hmm. All right, and Jerry Harrison, he's with the New Mexico Health Resources Group, a group that helps foster recruitment. Jerry, what do you anticipate will be the impact of more enrollees under the Affordable Care Act starting in January? And what are you going to do to recruit more dentists to New Mexico? Jerry?
The impact should be substantial in terms of children who have been included in the ACA and low-income adults that will be covered under the expanded Medicaid program. So the pressure for individual providers and programs such as community dental will be to have additional folks coming in. We will continue to recruit nationally for dentists and hygienists to work in the state. We attract between 15 and 20 new dentists each year coming to practice. A lot of them New Mexicans returning from the dental schools that the state of New Mexico supports through the WICHE program. And a very high proportion of them being the graduates of the residency that Dr. Jensen leads.
And let's define the WICHE program for us. Would any of you, the WICHE program, how does that work? Dr. Jensen.
I'm going to defer to Jerry because I think he really understands this program very, very well.
There are a number of dental schools in the western part of the United States that have agreed to participate in a partial funding for dental students. Since we don't have a dental school, what we do is make a contribution to the tuition that would be charged to each student. And the amount will be right around $23,000, $24,000 a year. And then the student is responsible for any remaining tuition. That's the simplest way that I can.
Yeah, and I understand. Yeah, I understand the state supports dental students to the tune of $2 million just in FY13, last fiscal year, right?
Right, and that doesn't account for very many slots. I think that we'll 14. Be joining the movement to increase the number of slots in the next legislative session.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of increasing, providers and that kind of thing, Mary, you're attending a meeting today in Espanola, north of Santa Fe, and I understand one of your tasks is to work on legislation for the next session of the legislature. Last year, they failed to pass a bill that would have created a new group of professionals, dental therapists, hygienists. Tell us about that.
Well, I think it's really important in this time and this day and age when we have rising costs and lower reimbursement rates, and the need remains the same. It has not changed. We have to do something radically different, and that's where this legislation comes in. What it will do is create a mid-level provider that can come in and work in these communities that are in dire need of dental services and be able to perform the kind of preventive dentistry and some restorative care that consumes a lot of the time of our dentists, leaving the dentist free to do much more complex cases. And I failed to mention that in the community of patients that we see a much greater number of people who are much more medically complex. We see more people with behavioral health issues. We see people with substance abuse issues. They're much more complex to treat than the greater population. And so if we had an individual in the clinic who could provide the services to the drill and fill and the preventive and the great hygiene, that would free up our dentists to do those kinds of complex procedures for more people.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Jensen, are dental therapists, hygienists as good as dentists? Is it the same, say, as seeing a physician's assistant instead of a doctor?
This is new ground for the profession of dentistry, and how I'd like to address that is that obviously UNM's mission is, if this mid-level provider is developed, that we be the educational body for them. Right now, we do not have any educational standards. They're being, as we speak, worked on right now by the Commission on Dental Accreditation and the American Dental Education Association to develop accreditation standards for how we need to train these individuals. The main thing that I would want to emphasize that if the legislature does decide to do this, it can't be an underfunded educational program, okay? The scope of care issues, those don't really concern me because we've seen models out there on the medical side. But the underfunded of education does concern me because if we do this, we need to educate them well.
And that does happen sometimes where similarly funded programs see a drain from one to fund the other, and you're saying don't do that.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's take some questions from callers. I'm interested in knowing if you would go see a dental hygienist instead of a dentist if you had a toothache, for instance. Just like you go to a physician's assistant. Many, many people do now. Call us, if you would, in Albuquerque at 277-5866. And if you're out of town, it's free, 1-877-899-5866. And we look forward to hearing from everyone out there on these dental questions. Jerry, So you work every day on recruiting more dental professionals. What kinds of questions do you get from potential recruits who may be living here for the long term?
The most frequent question is there loan repayment available? Mm-hmm. New Mexico has two loan repayment programs that are really helpful as a recruitment tool. One is the National Health Service Corps, and we have about 175 medical and dental primary care providers participating in that. And then we have a state-run loan repayment program. Even with financial support coming through the WICHE program, very frequently young dentists have educational debt exceeding $250,000. And so that's the very, very first question. And I failed to mention in respect to the WICHE program that if dental students do participate in it, they are obligated to come back to New Mexico, and roughly 95% of them do. So it's just a tremendous tool as well.
I'd just like to echo a little bit of the points that Jerry was making. You know, I've had dental residents who have had debt loads as high as $700,000, easily in the range of $300,000. And it is very much a real concern. And quite frankly, loan repayment or loan forgiveness mechanisms are probably one of the best ways to recruit these graduates to anywhere.
Mm-hmm. So you're asking the legislature to help?
Yes.
Yeah, so,
you know, there are some very interesting models out there. Right now, Wyoming, which is a highly rural state, state of 500,000, contracted with the University of Nebraska College of Dentistry and also Creighton. They take 10 Wyoming students a year between the two institutions. The institutions decided on what a tuition level will be. And the Wyoming legislature basically says, okay, that dental student after 4 years will come out with $40,000 worth of debt. We pick up the rest. But they are obligated to come back for 4 years and treat Medicaid patients. And so the models are out there that New Mexico could look at. Mm-hmm. I think going back a little bit to the mid-level providers, I would also – I'm involved in a grant interprofessional collaboration working with the College of Nursing, nurse practitioners, and also El Pueblo, the community health center out in Bernalillo. And what we're doing there is bringing oral health into the primary care setting. As my good friend Leo Rouse, who's the dean of Howard Dental School, says, dentists own dentistry, but they don't own oral health. And what we're trying to do is put the mouth back into the body. Somehow we segregated it out. And what we're being able to, what we're finding out there is, no, we don't expect a nurse practitioner to be the dentist, but they can begin to look at and channel these patients to find dental homes.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, in rural New Mexico for decades now, we've had clinics where more and more we're seeing dental
yes.
services provided. I'm thinking of the La Clínica del Norte up in Tierra María, which has yeah. a dental office there, and they've been successful.
And I have to say, as one of my former residents, who is the dentist up there.
Ah,
right.
Okay. Wonderful.
And I would have to say that it was a real collaborative effort. That particular clinic was up without a dentist for 4.5 years, and we worked closely with Dr. Jensen in the residency and the individual who decided to take the position, and it was a real win. And I believe that that dentist also had a WICHE obligation and successfully competed for loan repayment. There's a real crystal clear example of the things that we've been working on for several years that worked for a very rural, remote community.
And I imagine these hygienists would also go through the same kind of recruitment process where they would be encouraged or required to serve.
You know, you raise a really important, you know, as we move forward with this mid-level provider, you know, I think that one of the things that I think probably Jerry and Mary would both agree with me, we got to make sure that this middle-level provider gets to the patient population that needs treatment, okay?
Exactly.
For them to just be swallowed up by corporate dentistry and say, you know, we can just hire them at a cheaper level, let's don't have any dentists, is, you know, I think I would caution the legislature as they go through this process to make sure that we are targeting the populations we need to target.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, we want to encourage our listeners and our tweeters to chime in as well. And we have some resources posted there. Follow us at KUNM News on Twitter and give us your calls as well. Again, I'll give that number, 277-5866 in Albuquerque or 877-899-5866 outside of town. And we have a comment from Maria in Santa Fe. Hi, Maria. Are you there, Maria? Good morning. She's quiet this morning. Taking some coffee, maybe? Okay, we will come back to Maria after this break and give us your calls and questions. Tweet us at KUNM News on Twitter. We'll be right back.
Find Burnco Bernie at Bernalillo County's many fun events in October. Take pictures with Burnco Bernie and post them to Instagram with the hashtag Burnco Bernie. Find all the events at burncobernie.com. A message from the tax-exempt Bernalillo County.
Support for KUNM comes from Pure, a member-owned insurer for high-net-worth families, offering expertise and resources to help prevent claims and resolve them without hassle when they happen. Pure. Love your insurance. More at pureinsurance.com.
Okay, it's 8:21. I'm Deborah Martinez. Today's talk show, call-in show topic is dentistry in New Mexico, and we want to hear from you. Do you floss? Is that an important part of your day? And do you realize what can happen when you don't floss over time? Dr. Jensen joins me here from UNM in the studio, and I imagine you've seen patients over your career who didn't think that was that important. But in fact, not flossing can lead to periodontal disease, which can lead to diseases like diabetes and heart disease and even stroke, right?
Absolutely. You know, I used to say earlier in my career that, you know, just floss the teeth you want to keep. And but now we're, you know, realizing there's much more than just a loss of teeth and loss of function, loss of aesthetics. There's certainly in controlling diabetes, and this is one of the areas where in this interprofessional collaboration that I spoke about we're doing with the nurse practitioners and primary care doctors, where we're working with diabetic patients that they're trying to manage and trying to get their oral health under control, because we know very much what we call it is a bidirectional disease, okay? As that periodontal disease gets out of whack, so does their diabetes, and their diabetes feeds the susceptibility to the periodontal disease. So there are real, you know, there's a body of literature about low birth weight babies during pregnancy. Certainly, the inflammatory process, the periodontal disease, is an inflammatory process that can impact cardiovascular disease. We're seeing pulmonary diseases because of aspiration of the bacteria that are in the mouth. I mean, my residents on a daily, weekly basis are consulting in the hospital trying to rule out that might be the origin of an infection for a debilitated patient.
And don't we see a lot of patients in the ER who haven't had the dental care they needed, Medicaid patients in great numbers, who show up at the ER with greater problems like you're describing?
Absolutely, and that's a very expensive way to deliver dentistry. Mm-hmm. You know, it's literally, you know, we have treated patients who folks don't understand that there are patients who we see who are admitted to the intensive care unit and probably end up with $500,000 bill, which in many cases is funded by the taxpayer. Okay. If we want to get bang for our buck, let's stop treating these individuals in the emergency room and in the intensive care units.
Seems to be a lot of education of preventive methods is needed. So let's go to the phones and speak to Catherine in Albuquerque. She has a comment. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning. My understanding is that the dental residency program keeps about two-thirds of those residents in Albuquerque rather than in the rural parts of the state. My question is have they been using the locum tenens model to get these residents out to the rural areas while they're residents so they can learn about those communities and maybe be recruited? That's my question. Thank you.
We, in fact, established rotations to the rural areas for my residents. My residents rotate to Silver City, to Lordsburg, to Roswell, to give them that rural experience. And I couldn't agree with the caller more. My own personal background, I practiced in rural Nebraska for about 20 years, so I've walked the walk. I know what it's like to be a rural dentist. And it's something very near and dear to my heart that to try and have our graduates go to rural areas. You know, quite frankly, I'm very happy that we actually are getting about a third of our graduates into rural areas. And with the efforts of Jerry Harrison, New Mexico Health Resources, I'd say about 60% of our residents practice in public health settings afterwards.
I agree with that, Dr. Jensen. And the definition of Albuquerque has to be extended out very often. Frequently. That's because the number of community health centers, dental sites that are located actually outside of the city, either to the south or to the east, that even extend into Valencia and Santa Fe County. So if, for example, someone goes to work for First Choice, they may actually end up working in a rural community as opposed to Albuquerque proper. And I think maybe a third is a low estimate.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I want to ask callers to keep on ringing us and ask you a question. Did you know that poor oral health is related to other aspects of your health and can lead to things, as we just said, like heart disease, diabetes, and stroke? It's pretty interesting information. Or do you have children who've been turned away by dentists who don't accept Medicaid? We're going to talk a little more about children after we take this call from Jim in Las Vegas. It's a comment he has. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. I do know about, I have heard and I have experienced that, a certain amount of gingivitis and all that can affect your health and drag you down. I've experienced it many times and had good hygienists fix me up. I wanted to share a sort of a tip, I guess, and that is that I've been lucky with dental care because years ago, maybe 20 years ago, I bought a dental insurance policy that cost me about $12 a month, and it still costs about that, $12 or $15 a month. And I've saved thousands of dollars with it, I asked my agent once how they could offer dental insurance at such a low rate when it saves you so much more. And he said, well, people buy dental insurance because they think it's kind of a good idea and kind of a prudent thing to do, but there are so many people who still are afraid to go to a dentist for some reason I don't understand, that the odds come out in your favor if you do go to the dentist and use your dental insurance. So that's just a sort of a consumer tip I wanted to share.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jim. It is fairly reasonable in most plans, and you can, as he said, get them from a broker or today, I think, under the ACA, there are maybe some more tips that you can look into. And we do have another call from Lillian in Albuquerque. I hope I'm not too soon there. Lillian?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
I have a comment. I'm so grateful for this show today. This is the one issue that is forefront in my whole life these days. It's serious. I'm going to be 60, and I'm on disability and Medicare, and I haven't been able to get any dental care. And all my life, all my young adult life, I took such good care of my teeth and went to dentists regularly. And I had a birth defect and a car wreck, and I had to have very extensive work done. And I really value my teeth. And I know extensively how much more research they've done lately, how our dental health is more connected to all parts of our entire overall health than they ever knew before, like you were talking about. And it just infuriates me that when things happen as they do now that I'm older, I can't get help with it. And I don't know what to do, and I don't have a car either. So to go to, like, the one you have to show up at 5 o'clock in the morning and wait in line, I can't do that anymore. And I'm not Native American, so I can't go to the one down the street and get free care there. And it's so expensive. It's so expensive. Just a blink at me costs, you know. I'm just at wit's end, and that's, I just wanted to comment on it because it's really difficult for me. And I do not, I've so tried so hard not to end up in the ER or the urgent care or ICU. I worked as a nurse tech at UNM, and I took care of countless people that couldn't get care and ended up in the hospital because of abscesses and infections. And I don't know, I'm ranting, but it's just so important to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for sharing that experience, Lillian. Do any of the panelists have some advice?
Well, first off, I think that this caller really very poignantly points out some of the barriers to oral health care. Okay, one is that Medicare, way back in 1966, dentistry was not part of that. So as our older populations, that's not a piece of the Medicare dollar. One of the things that I would really talk to this individual about is that there are resources, one being Mary Altenberg's clinic, Community Dental, where they can function with a sliding fee scale. We have somewhat of sliding fee scale. First Choice has sliding fee scales that based upon income. So there are. This is also an individual we would really want to maybe hook up through a social worker to see, can she qualify for Medicaid or Medicaid, particularly when the Affordable Care Act comes through. So I hope we can alleviate a little bit of her despair that with the ACA coming on board, that there might be avenues out there for her.
Good.
Mary and Jerry, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, this is Mary. Yes, I would urge the caller to call Community Dental Services and to ask for me personally, not today because I'm not in the office today, but to call and ask for me. Our number is 843-7493. I do recognize, though, that she did indicate that transportation is an issue, right. And that's huge in this. You don't have to be rural to have transportation issues in getting to dental services, and that's a huge barrier for the people that we serve. And we don't have a clinic on the west side. We're at Alamosa. We're at Central and Bridge. We have one clinic there. But when we think about this, and this is something I wanted to bring up as well, is we're looking at mid-level providers. We're looking at raising reimbursement rates. And we have to think of this as a system of care. There's not one answer. The mid-level provider is not going to solve all the problems that we're seeing that the caller brought up. It's a whole system of issues that need to be addressed, and we have to look at it that way. We have to start looking at interprofessional collaboration. We have to start getting our primary care docs doing more around oral health. We need to have a mid-level provider. We need to have better reimbursement rates so that more dentists will be willing to see some of these clients. It's a whole spectrum of issues that need to be addressed.
And I understand the Affordable Care Act is addressing that particular issue in that they're under the Act, Medicaid reimbursements will go up. I'm not sure by how much, but
right.
Anything's better than nothing, correct?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right. Oh, go ahead, Doctor.
I was going to say that particularly the reimbursement issue is important because even if we develop a mid-level provider, if it's not, you know, the cost of that dental chair for the mid-level provider is the same as for a dentist. And if, you know, so if from an economic model, you know, that can't, you know, that has to be successful to be sustainable.
Okay. I do want to direct you to our website, KUNM.org. After the show, go there. We'll have a number of resources listed for you there, including the number to Mary's organization, which again is 843-7493. And you will find all kinds of links and things to go to help get some questions answered for you. And another question I have for callers, do you see a dentist regularly? And what are some of the obstacles to getting care? We just heard from Lillian on that, and hopefully she can get some help in that regard. We have a call from Mike in Albuquerque.
Yeah, well, I'm to answer your question, I'm lucky. I can afford to see a dentist, and I see them. Actually, I see them every 3 months. I'm type 2 diabetic, and so I have actually excellent dental care.
Tell me about some of the challenges you have as a diabetic that force you to go every 3 months.
Well, no. Well, I've always had. I grew up in the South, and I've always had cruddy teeth. I mean, the South is. You have to understand. I watched my relatives as I was growing up. They would all lose their teeth, and then they would start. They would become diabetic. Then they'd get heart problems. Then they fell into congestive heart failure. Mm. And that seems to be, that was the sequence of the people in the South. We ate a very sweet diet. We were not taught about, brush your teeth. Well, flossing is way more important than brushing. Mm-hmm. And so we weren't taught about that stuff. I didn't learn that until I was a graduate student in Canada, and I had this poor dentist from Europe look in my mouth and just be horrified what he was seeing. And so this is a huge problem. I'm really excited about this idea of the dental practitioner, but I'm really bothered by the fact that cost besides education, and cost is a huge factor. I mean, I work with people who cannot afford a dentist. They just simply cannot afford one. I work with people who have few teeth or no teeth, and they are setting themselves up for heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
And why the medical system, why we allowed dentistry to disappear from the entire medical system, which it kind of has, with all the tie-ins that we're seeing between oral health and physical health, it really is quite beyond me. But I'm curious about this legislation or whatever to get this this defined.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we need to know who's doing it, when it's being moved, so we can talk to our legislatures to say that this is important stuff. And unless you tell us that kind of information, we can't help. And I really think that's an important thing. But we have to do something about cost. We just have to. I mean, I have wonderful, but it's very high tech. It's as good as it gets, as far as I'm concerned. As far as I can tell, and I was trained as a scientist.
Right.
Thank you, Mike, for your comments. I think Mary wanted to chime in, and then Dr. Jensen.
Okay.
Right. That's an excellent point, and I can point you to information on.
So Mary's on the cell phone that we might have lost, or she's going through a black hole. Go ahead, John.
There's another very important piece of legislation that's happening out there, and it's come up multiple times. It's a project near and dear to my heart because I first did the original work on this from a grant from the Macy Foundation. And this is what we call the BADDS program that Chancellor Paul Roth is taking before the legislature again to see if there's funding. And what it is, it's leveraging off the existing BAMD program that University of New Mexico School of Medicine has. And in that program, they're recruiting students from rural backgrounds, disadvantaged backgrounds, underrepresented minorities, and they put them into a highly structured, very highly mentored four-year undergraduate program. And then on to medical school. They're given provisional acceptance to medical school before they start their undergraduate years. We want to do the same thing for dentistry and do the same thing. We'd take 20 students a year. They would then have to go out of state for 4 years for their dental school years, but be returned to some of our clinics here in New Mexico during their clinical training years of dental school. then those individuals will be obligated to come back to the state and train in the residency program. And then they would be obligated to practice in New Mexico. And this is another very important legislative effort that has gone unfunded for probably four cycles of the legislature now, and we're hoping to get that off the ground. And the thing about that program is that it's a very when you look at the cost of building a dental school of $97 million and recurrent annual costs of keeping a dental school open for $21 million, this is a very inexpensive way to train dentists to come back to New Mexico. And we know that if we can take individuals from different types of communities, there's a greater chance they'll return to those communities to practice. I'm an example. My dad was a farmer rancher. I returned to the small town of 3,000 I grew up in to practice dentistry for 20 years. So, you know, those models are out there.
You were talking about your experience in Kansas?
Nebraska.
Nebraska, right. Much like the demographic, the geography of New Mexico.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, you have population center of Omaha-Lincoln, like you have Albuquerque, Santa Fe, maldistribution of dentists, but...
Mm-hmm. Yep. So if there are budding students out there, you would say to them in El Rito or Peñasco or Hobbs, all of these small outlets, you'd encourage them to look into dentistry.
You bet. Right.
Or hygienists.
This would greatly expand something that few people know about in the state, and that some of our universities and colleges have what are called pre-dental societies. And one of the ways that we've increased, especially at UNM, the number of students that get some information about dental careers, both dentistry and dental hygiene, is through some undergraduate exposure to the occupations. And the 10 years or so that program has existed, we've seen an increase in the number of New Mexico students being admitted to dental schools.
Thanks. Then that's Jerry Harrison of New Mexico Health Resources that does a recruitment. He's on the phone with us this morning. We're talking about dentistry, and we want to know what your experience has been. We have an email question from Katie in Albuquerque. She wants to know why dentists take so many x-rays and how many are necessary, really. And we're talking, it seems that now with all the high tech, you can get multiple images instead of just one panoramic x-ray image. Why are they necessary?
Well, one is that we have to see in order to diagnose and to treat. And I think that you know, a full mouth series are 18 individual films. So that seems like a lot of x-rays. But with the high-speed digital films, I guarantee you, walking around the city of Albuquerque on a sunny day, you're receiving more radiation than one full mouth series of dental x-rays.
But isn't that good radiation or no? The sun is not good. For 15 minutes, didn't they say?
How we look at it is how much dosing are you getting versus, you know, how many images I'm taking.
Okay. And so you're saying, rest assured, you're not getting overdosed.
Right. You know, the person who goes in for a chest x-ray, you know, I don't know how many hundreds of full mouth x-rays would be equivalent to one chest x-ray, but it's high.
Okay. Well, you've given me some reassurance because I'm always hounded right. to get the x-rays, and then nothing happens until they go and examine and say, oh, yeah, that's the cavity that we saw in the x-ray 6 months ago. And I'm like, why didn't you deal with it?
At UNM, we develop our guidelines. Does everybody need all these x-rays all the time? No.
Once a year or once every 6 months?
You know, I wouldn't even go that far because I think that, you know, there are individuals who are in good oral health that I might not take an x-ray in 5 years because they just have no, you know, we have to assess that patient's risk factors.
So can the patient say, I'm sorry, I feel like I'm in good shape. Next year we'll get them. Can you insist or will they refuse to treat you?
The patient always has the last say. Okay. And, you know, I might have to say I can't treat you because I can't see what it is. But obviously, any patient has a right to refuse any treatment that they want.
All right. Thank you, doctor. We're going to take some calls here from Fred first. A question in Albuquerque. Good morning, Fred. Yes, yes, we can hear you.
Well, I just wanted to thank you for having the show. I think it's pretty important. I'd like to make 2 points. I think the VA, which is a very large institution and historically has played, you know, a very important institutional role, you know, in the delivery of medicine in New Mexico. I think if you look at the VA right now, you'll see that dental services are shrinking rapidly. And so I just wanted to ask someone to comment on, you know, that institutional effect over time, you know, that the VA has had. The other thing is I'd like to know what you're doing about reaching out to children in secondary schools, in particular in primary schools, or I'd like to suggest maybe you do something to reach out to them to improve their flossing and whatnot in that area. So thank you very much.
Well, Fred, I do know in some of my research I found that a lot of the school-based clinics that have been established over the last couple of decades, there are more dental services being offered for kids, and they are able to identify some of these issues
earlier. Our division of dental, we exist in the Department of Dental Medicine. We have two divisions, dental services and dental hygiene. Our dental hygiene school here, they do have school-based clinics and have outreach clinics. So we try and it's a very the caller raises a very important point, and this is an area that we continue to work at in our program here. I know. Good, Mary, you're back on. Good.
Yeah, I'm back on, and for my part, I can respond to both parts of the caller. There is something that has just started called the APS Dental Initiative, bringing together different partners to respond to the needs of so many of our schools, and working with some of the primary care providers in those school-based health centers to teach them about some oral health issues, much like what's going on in El Pueblo. Speaking to the VA, I can't speak to how it operates directly in the Veterans Administration Dental Clinic here. I do know the dental director there is dedicated and committed to serving our veterans, but we have a partnership with our local Veterans Administration to do the extensive dentures and crowns and bridges for our veterans at our clinics, and we've seen this just grow exponentially because of the need is so great for our veterans, and we are proud to be able to serve them. So there are pieces in place.
Fantastic. Thank you, Mary, for that information. We also have Gail in Albuquerque, who has a mobile dental service with a collaborative dentist. Tell me about that, Gail.
Hi, I'm actually a collaborative hygienist. I started a nonprofit about 3 years ago with another retired dentist. It's 100% mobile, and we service Jemez, Vaughn, the charter schools, several of the YDIs, and we do provide those services Fred was talking about, to the children to provide access to care. My question is that we have been significantly fighting for something like a Dental Therapist Act to allow us to extend the services to the people out there and kind of be like a PA for dentistry. It's frustrating to me to think that we're unable to do an exam and yet a PA can do an exam like a doctor on the whole entire body, yet we aren't able to do that on the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's my question for him. How does he feel about that Dental Therapist Act?
Dr. Jensen?
The act, as I said before, I have no issues with scope of care, okay? What I'm concentrate on is how are we going to educate these individuals, okay? And the, you know, whatever the legislature decides, and by extension, the public, we want to be ready here to educate them if that moves forward.
Okay, and we are going to be following at KUNM News the movement of all health issues related to the state legislature, including this move, this legislation for dental dental therapists. So we'll stay on that. And we have to take a short break, but we have more calls. Stay with us. Come back with your questions. Do you see a dentist regularly? And what are some of the obstacles in getting that care? We'll be right back.
Join the Kavira Coalition for a lively evening with Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Gary Snyder and Santa Fe living treasure Jack Leffler, November 13th at the Embassy Suites in Albuquerque. Two conservation legends discuss stewardship of our natural landscapes, adaptation, and the challenges we face in the West in the 21st century. To learn more about Gary Snyder and Jack Leffler on November 13th, call 505-820-2544. A message from the tax-exempt Kavira Coalition.
This year, the 11th annual Socorro Fest will fill the historic City Plaza with 2 days of arts and music on 4 stages from October 11th to the 13th. For a preview, go to SocorroFest.com, then join KUNM on Saturday, the 12th from 7 to 10 p.m. for live action from the Plaza stage and performances from Felix y Los Gatos, the Memphis P-Tales, and others. That's Saturday, October 12th, 7 p.m. only on KUNM and KUNM.org.
And we're back on the call-in show talking about dentistry today. I'm Deborah Martinez, your host, and you just heard our website, KUNM.org. Go there, find out more about dentistry. There are plenty of resources we're posting there for you to get information if you're looking for how to get care, how to get your child care, how Medicaid expansion will affect your child's ability to get care. Call us at 277-5866 with your issues and questions, comments. And out of town, 877-899-5866. But do check our website out. We have lots of resources there and links. You can also tweet us. We have panelists here ready to answer your questions. Dr. Peter Jensen, the dental residency director at the University of New Mexico. We're talking about pending legislation in the next session of the legislature with Mary Altenberg, executive director of the nonprofit Community Dental Services that serves folks here in the greater Albuquerque area. And it's a huge area indeed. And Jerry Harrison of New Mexico Health Resources working on recruitment of more dentists. So anybody, did you want to?
I think we've talked a lot about a lot of different initiatives, particularly at the legislative level. And the one word of caution that I have is that there's only so much money that's going to go into the dental education funding bucket, okay? And then how are we going to parse that out? And do we do that at the expense of already, initiatives that are already present? And so I think that particularly as the legislature moves forward in those issues, they, do we end up with a zero-sum game at the end of the day, or do we increase access to care is, I guess, my cautionary note. And unfortunately, without money, there is no mission.
Mm-hmm. True. Well, one of the issues is low reimbursement rates for dentists. And some dentists are saying, no, we can't take Medicaid patients because, it's just too expensive for us to work on you, which is a phenomenon that we're seeing more and more of. Is there a solution, anyone on our panel, to that? I know that the ACA is going to provide higher reimbursement rates for dentists to incentivize them to treat more patients. Is that one of the solutions? Mary, are you with us?
Well, that will definitely be one of the pieces. And as I said before, it's a systemic issue. There are many places where we can make improvements that will increase access to care. And so the dental therapist is one, the BA to DDS is one, increasing Wichee slots and the amount of money that's given. It's all of these things will help improve access to care. For us, as Dr. Jensen said, without money, there is no mission. That's where we're struggling at Community Dental Services. We have tremendous need, and we have low reimbursement rates, which is having a struggle as an organization to meet the need. And so, yes, reimbursement rates being raised would definitely be a plus.
All right. Thank you. Lily is calling from Albuquerque with a question. Good morning, Lily.
My question is, there's been a lot of discussion about people who don't have access to dental care ending up in emergency rooms and urgent care, which are staffed by doctors and physician assistants who do not have dental training, so they may be able to give antibiotics, but the problem of an infected tooth persists. So, my question would be, do you see a role for improved emergency dental care, which seems to be a big problem since these emergency rooms don't have anyone on call that they could call to come in and pull a tooth, and so they still don't get adequate treatment. Do you see a role for this in the future in New Mexico? It seems only the university has dentists available 24/7.
All right. We'll have Dr. Jensen answer that question. Go ahead.
The caller points out a tough issue. And, for instance, as a faculty member, when I'm on call with my residents, I'm, in fact, on call for all the emergency rooms in the state of New Mexico, what we call the PALS line. So when those cases come into a small rural community, you know, I call them and try and walk them through. Definitive treatment is in finding a dental home. You know, just emergent treatment is not the way to go. And right now, I think that as we come into the Affordable Care Act and we start measuring, you know, what are the outcomes for these patients rather than we got this procedure done, hopefully that trend will begin to change. But right now, I don't have a good solution for the caller. But you know, I'm absolutely in her camp of not going down that route.
Okay. And let's take a call from Española and Tana at El Centro. Good morning, Tana.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. So I work for El Centro Family Health, which is a large community health clinic in northern New Mexico. We provide primary care and dental care. And so many of the issues that have been brought up today, to me, speak to the need for not only a mid-level dentistry position, but also the use of community health workers in the dental clinic environment. That's something that really has helped the team approach to care and preventive care and issues like transportation, issues like health behavior change, lifestyle change around care and overall health in our population. So I wanted the panel to speak to some processes in place to get community health workers who are lay paraprofessionals who have very high cultural competency in our local communities, not a lot of high-level higher education, but really have a lot of power in terms of helping our communities become healthier.
Yeah, you're right, Tana, and you're talking about the promotoras up north and in the south, and also the community health workers, different names, same kind of person working in the pueblos and on the reservations that people trust, and they can be these conduits and reference sources to help, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's one thing we haven't touched upon is when individuals do have resources like Medicaid, sometimes it's underutilized. And the community health workers, social workers, you know, can overcome a lot of these barriers to get patients to points of care. Absolutely. This has got to be a team sport. And the corner dental office doesn't, you know, we all have to start to tap into this.
Doesn't just take a village, it takes several. Go ahead, Mary.
And this is something that Community Dental Services is looking into as well. That is a critical piece that is missing. And that is the community health worker or the patient navigator, someone who's there to make the linkage.
They're so valuable. Go ahead, Jerry.
There are three movements going on in the state to address that particular issue. The Department of Health probably will have some legislation in respect to a registrar of community health workers, promotoras, those types of things. And then the Conama Foundation, Santa Fe Community College, and also the University of New Mexico have efforts to maybe even move towards certification.
All right. Well, I want to thank everyone for joining us today, the callers who contributed their questions and comments, our panelists, Dr. Peter Jensen, the Dental Residency Director at the University of New Mexico. On the phone, we had Mary Altenberg, Executive Director of the nonprofit Community Dental Services in Albuquerque, Jerry Harrison of New Mexico Health Resources, and I want to thank our engineers, Ramon Garcia, and assisting is Jeff White. Thank you both. And Elaine Baumgartel is not only our executive producer today, but she screened the calls. a Jill of all trades, we could say. KUNM's poverty and public health coverage is funded by support from the Kellogg Foundation, the McCune Foundation, the Frost Foundation, and the Conalma Foundation. Visit us at KUNM.org. Click under News. I'm Deborah Martinez. Join us next week at 8 a.m. for another call-in show.